Hello and welcome back to the Advisors Assemble podcast. And this time around, I've got the lovely Mr. Paul Archer. Paul, how are you doing? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks very much for a lovely introduction. Thank you.
Oh, I was thinking, or should I say beautiful? What kind of adjective can I use? And I thought I went with the safe option, but got a reaction anyway. So winning already.
Lovely's lovely. I go with that one. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Excellent. So I know for a fact, genuine fact, that there will be a number of people listening that know you already. However, there may be one or two that don't. Can you tell everyone, like, who you are, what you do, and all that kind of jazz?
Yeah, of course I can. Okay, well, it's where you start, isn't it? I run a company based in the UK. That doesn't seem to matter nowadays because you can travel the world virtually.
No, literally.
So it doesn't make a lot of difference now. Back in the day, of course, I'd jump on a long-haul flight to Bangladesh or India to do my training, which used to take me 2 days. But no, I run a company, a financial services training company. I have done for 20 years. In fact, this year, Alex, is my 20-year anniversary.
Well, I wasn't even born when you set up.
Brilliant. I'm sure that's the case. 20 years I've been operating my own firm. I do a lot of things, really, but my main purpose is to help people in the mortgage and financial services sector. I work with lots of different people in that sector, and I help them to make a good living, do some good service to customers, get into the marketplace, succeed. I'm also very keen to help people get into the modern world as well, the modern AI-based world, virtual world. That's a big push of mine now, because a lot of the younger generation are coming in now, and they're coming into our sector, and they're looking around thinking, my gosh, this sector's a bit old-fashioned. Not to be disrespectful to anybody listening, of course.
Yeah, we've just lost a load of listeners. Come back.
So I'm sure that they'll probably agree. So that's what I do. I operate from Cheltenham, Gloucestershire. I've got a basement studio which we built. Well, I didn't build it. Builders built it. We commissioned it, and it was actually finished, dare I say, at the end of February 2020, literally just in time for lockdown. That was more luck than judgment, I can assure you. I've got this basement studio. It's got massively fast broadband. We've got cameras. We've got video screens. We've got tech coming out of our ears here. And this is where the training and coaching and development is delivered from.
Why would I need coaching? The broadest of questions. Because in the mortgage space, mortgage advisor, they are very good at getting and helping their clients. What's the main area that you find that people are either looking for or don't know that they need training for?
Yeah, that's a great thought to share that one. Is why do people need coaching? Well, first of all, coaching itself is not a fancy thing. Coaching is really where we help people on a one-to-one basis. Training is where we help a group of people. That's kind of my definition of the two. Everybody has their own definition. So when you say coaching people in the financial services sector, why do people need it? Well, first of all, there's a fair bit of mandatory stuff going on, of course. We're all beautifully regulated. And as a result of that, we have to be fully qualified, authorized, skilled. We've got the senior management regime coming in for solo practitioners. So there's an element of mandatory. So people come to us for their technical training, because they're having to pass an exam or get some kind of upgrade on their qualification. So we help a lot of people do that. A lot of those people do it voluntarily, some don't. They need to pass this exam, so they come along to us. So that's the first one, really. The second one is the CPD regime. People want to keep themselves up to date. They want to keep themselves abreast of issues, so that they come to us for that. Some, and a lot of advisors, though, know that they can do better. They can get themselves in possibly a bit of a habit, bit of a routine, and they come to us for some help in their sales skills, their advisory skills. You and I worked together on prospecting before, so that's another area that people come to us for. The other thing about our sector is that you have these people called product providers. Now, product providers, of course, banks, building societies, specialist mortgage lenders, insurance companies, they do provide a lot of training to advisors and brokers, and rightfully so. A lot of that's provided, but that tends to focus a lot more on the technical side, mandatory side. So if somebody's looking for sort of real skill development in their capability, then that's something that we can help them with. So there's a few thoughts.
And are you, is it more people coming to you, are they more like the self-employed working for themselves, or are they part of like a big organisation, or is it an absolute mix?
It is a mix, actually, because our sector, of course, is dominated by self-employed people, particularly the mortgage sector. Most are one or two-man bands, aren't they? So they come to me as individuals, self-employed individuals, network members or whatever. But I also do a lot of work with corporates as well. I work with a number of specialist lenders, and I help the whole team. For example, that they have needs for training. So I might, for example, have a whole team of BDMs, business development managers, whose job is to sell to brokers and financial advisors. And of course, those people need developing and training and influencing, presenting skills and things. So I do a lot of that as well. That works really well because you get to know a whole team of people. But probably 50-50 split, people coming as teams, people as individuals.
If I were to ask one of the people that I know that work with you and say, what were you like before and what are you like now? How has this improved you? Or how has it made you think differently about advice, or whether it's the kind of the sales kind of things or the process? What do you think a lot of them would say?
Well, let's just take an example of somebody who's I've worked with who wants to improve their presentation skills, say their ability to present information to clients. And take, for example, the virtual stuff that we're all doing now. I've been working with a team of BDMs this week, actually, whose job, of course, is to talk to networks, mortgage advisors, but use video, live video sales, live video communication techniques. They've came to me and said, look, just like some help with this. We know this is going to be going on now for a longer period of time than we thought. Many thought that the lockdown would occur. And of course, as soon as lockdown, they'd be out and about doing their presenting in person. But now, of course, it's video is the way forward. So they'll come along. And the first thing I do is I always calibrate people to start with. Calibration is important to see where they are now. Then you work with them. And then you see where they are afterwards. So you calibrate them online and you have a look at their, what I call their Zoom zone or their Teams terrain, what it looks like when they're on their camera. And you look at their background, their lighting, their tech, their microphones, those sort of things. So that's the first thing you can calibrate very quickly. So you know, you work on that and you can very quickly see an immediate difference in the way they come across and how they talk, how they use visuals, PowerPoints. You can very quickly see a massive difference. So you're putting them in the top sort of 5% of people with the ability to present online. So that's a good example of how you can change people.
I've never heard anyone say the words Zoom zone.
Do you like that?
I am now going to use it all the time.
Yeah, I got it from a friend of mine called Rob Geraghty, who uses the word Zoom zone. Because most people use Teams, don't they? So I call it Teams terrain now.
I love it. I use Google Meet. So I'm not, I've got to think of the Google garage. I'm going to work on that one. I'm going to work on it.
But that's one example of how people can change. Another one might be that I get people to start thinking beyond just going through a routine of fact find, question answer, present product, go through the process, and start to really get to know clients and customers. One thing I've been working on the last few months is protection advising, protection sales. Of course, protection selling is something brokers dip in and out of, really, according to their marketplace, let's be honest. I applied for some life assurance in January this year through my IFA, and I only just got the acceptance last week. So that took, what, 9 months to underwrite. Okay, lockdown didn't help, you know, with medical, because I'm 57, so I had to have a medical, you see. It's a bit different when you're locked down to have a medical, you know, there's a few procedures to go through protocols. The point I'm making, though, is that my poor IFA, who gave me advice on this one, didn't get paid. Well, it hasn't even been paid yet because the first premium's not been paid. So that's the point behind protection selling. But of course, to sell protection, advise protection, you've got to get your fact-finding spot on. You've got to ask the right questions during the discussion with the client, find out about their life, where they're going, what their goals are, where they've come from, the impact of course, of dying or becoming ill or long-term. And I work with advisors to help them ask those right questions, get a conversation going. A conversational fact-finding is key. And there's quite a lot of mortgage advisors, maybe quite a lot's probably a hard phrase to use, that have never really been taught how to fact find. That they do all the compliance stuff correctly. You know, the disclosure and the, you know, here's the fee disclosure, here's my ESIS, here's my KFI. They do all that really well because somebody's watching them every month to make sure they do. But they lack in the ability to really, truly get a conversational fact find. And that excites me when I get that working. When clients come back and say they enjoy the conversation with the advisor.
How do you do that then? Because I was, as you were saying, I was thinking, I always bang on about rapport and rapport building and doing it on autopilot, and that's why we do video and things like that. But I don't really get involved in the sales process at all. But for me, any kind of relationship in terms of selling anything is, it's easier when you're mates or as close to as possible. And then talking about this conversational fact finding sounds like rapport building and making it not just computer says no, computer says yes, and I'm not, it's almost, are you trying to make it like you're not filling out a form? Is that the kind of the key to it?
Yeah, it's not a bad description, actually. Yeah, it goes back to my early days, actually. I worked for the Prudential in the 1980s, to show my age there, as a self-employed advisor. And as long as you had shiny shoes and you could speak really well, you got the job. No, I'm joking. Because back in those days, it was about being your best pal. It was about being friendly. It was about being funny. It was about being charismatic. And the top salespeople then were the charismatic guys. You know, they could play golf with all their clients and stuff like that. Life's moved on, of course, since then, thankfully. Now it is, though, all those things you mentioned come into it. Of course, they do rapport, getting on with the client. I mean, I don't think you have to be friends with your client, but it makes the whole process a lot more enjoyable. It makes it more human. But rapport and trust building is, as you appreciate, of course, a lot more than just being friends. There's rapport, there's common ground, there's having trust, there's knowing what your intentions are, there's credibility, of course, the ability to communicate. But the real difference compared to, you know, computer says now, is being able to let go and let the customer talk and chat. Like you're doing now, Alex, you're asking me a couple of nice questions, you're getting me thinking, you're not interrupting me, I can hear you in the background there, so I'm quite happy to carry on talking until you steer me in another direction. And that's exactly what conversational fact finding is about.
How do you do that? Because I don't know what I'm doing. I just got a microphone and I invited someone to be interviewed on my podcast and did it. And I don't know what the rules are. I'm winging it. 100+ episodes in, I'm still winging it. I don't know how that is done. I assume there is a method I could learn.
No, you're doing it spot on. And that's the thing, of course, most people who are in our trade or industry do it really well and don't really know what they're doing that's doing really well. A lot of the experienced mortgage advisors, financial advisors just do a great job. Like you do. So how do you do it? First of all, the person who's coming to you has to admit that they need to improve in that area first. That's the first key. So you don't generally get individuals coming to me and saying, look, Paul, I want to get better at fact finding. You'll get people coming to you and saying, look, Paul, I want to sell more protection, or I want to be able to increase sales of this or give advice to clients around that. You get those questions and then you can help them. You might get a corporate coming to you. I've got one particular corporate client. It's a building society. I won't mention names. That's its client confidentiality. But the fact is that they've come to me and said, look, our mortgage advisors need to get away from computer says now. It's, you know, the no or yes, which is the word to use. Mm-hmm. I want my mortgage advisors to get away from just getting needs and moving on. I want them to have a freewheeling conversation around the topic. So what you then do is you get to listen to them. You have to hear them. You have to see what they're currently doing. And you mentioned actors, didn't you, in a few minutes ago. So you can set up, this is online, by the way, virtually. You can set up, don't call it role play. People get scared of role plays. They don't like role plays. Don't call it role play. But call it a simulated assessment or something fancy like that. And that's what it is, isn't it? To be honest about it. Yeah. People know it's a role play. Get an actor in. I love actors. Actors are quite ready to work at the moment. So that's quite.
Yeah, I can imagine.
A bit naughty of me to say that. But I love using amateur dramatic societies, drams, because invariably you get a good mixture of ages there. They're very, very good at it. They don't ask for too much in remuneration or fees. They're often just happy with expenses. And they'll do a really good job as a customer. So you've got to set that up first of all. You can't get their mate to be the customer and they're to be the advisor and role play that way, because their mates are always very kind to them. So you've got to set it up. You've got to listen to them. You've got to hear what they tell you, hear what how they do it. And then you set up, so you play it back to them. You get them to hear it themselves. And then you coach them on it. How did you feel you did there? Where could you maybe do a little bit better? What else could you do differently? You coach them on their recording. And you've got to get people to realize that what they're doing is probably not as good as it could be and that they want a better way. Then you teach them how to do it. Then you give them the input. You demonstrate. You roll out a few processes, a bit of theory maybe, some ideas, some words to use, structure. You do a bit of teaching. Which, in the online world of training, Alex, we don't have to do that live. We've got videos to show people of that. We've got audios to show. There's this concept we call flipping the classroom. flip as in flipping the coin. Back in the day, what we would do is we would bring all these poor little cherubs into the training room for about 2 weeks, and we'd start at 9 o'clock, finish at 5, and by 3 o'clock they were bored and exhausted anyway. I mean, a bit facetious here, but you get my point. But so those days, thankfully, have now gone. Training in a classroom, that's Victorian, isn't it? That's what we did in the Victorian days. Yeah. So we can now do show them videos, let them listen to podcasts, interviews of you know, really good best practice examples, do a bit of teaching online, and then we coach them, and then we get them to do it again, and then we get them to repeat it, and they'll have another go and they'll get better. You give them some coaching, a bit of feedback, and you can do that on a one-to-one with individuals online. Doesn't take long, half an hour, hours coaching, then they have another go, you listen to the call because you record all the calls, and they get better and better. People only get better at something, Alex, if they get to do it.
How regular are we doing this? Because I know sometimes you go and do a bit of training, you got all full of all these ideas, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And then it slowly fades away, the memory of those things that, like, you, because like the first time you go and sit with a client after the bit of training, you'll know then what I did wrong, and I'll do that next time. And then it slowly, how often are you sort of catching up with people on these kind of skills?
That's the secret, isn't it? Is to keep it going. Actions eventually become habits. Habits become character. Character becomes who you're about. And you can change a habit through training, but they've got to make it into a habit. Yeah, you've got to go back to people. I mean, one particular client I mentioned to you, we tend to do work with the same sales team every 8-9 months. We go back, we do a bit of refresher, we do something else, different topic. But we're catching up with them. We're seeing how they're getting on. We're seeing how they're evolving. It's got to be done regularly. Every couple of months, have a recap. But people expect training to have an immediate difference, and then suddenly they're going to be different all the time. But it doesn't work that way. People forget. People go back to their previous ways of doing things because it was easier.
Do you think post, let's say, we all get jabbed in the arm with a vaccine tomorrow, which will be amazing, do you think that the kind of our Zoom zone, are here to stay? Because pre-lockdown, there were a lot that did it, but there was a lot that want to see the whites of the eyes. Do you think the Zoom zone is going to be an essential skill now?
Whoa, that's a great point, isn't it? I mean, who knows what's going to happen in the future? There's plenty of people on LinkedIn that will tell you, but nobody's Gypsy Rosie Lee anymore, are they? But we can have a good idea of what's going to happen in the future. There will be a lot of people who want to go back to the way it was. It's a human thing. Let's go back to the way it used to be, where we could meet up in a classroom and we could, you know, meet face-to-face, belly button to belly button, and do our training there. So there's still a lot of people want to do that. I'll tell you what, actually, there's a lot of trainers that want to do that, which is quite scary, actually. A lot of trainers in my sector, people I know, really want to get back into a training room with people, do what they've always done, because they've done that really well. And some of them got very good on the online delivery, some not so good. Some have just stopped doing it until we go back to the vaccine and we all get back into classrooms. So that's a bit worrying, where the deliverer of the training wants to get back in. Now, the other people are the people that pay the money. Now, I'm commercially minded. I have bills to pay. I have a business to run. Therefore, I need income to make a living. Now, people that pay training fees, training costs, budgets, call them what you like. So that may well be the head of training, the head of HR, the head of sales, or it could be an individual who wants to buy their own training. They're more pragmatic now about the future. They've suddenly realized that they can actually get the same outcome in their training for a lot less time compared to what was done before. So where online delivery is done really well, you're not taking up as much live time. You're doing a lot more flipping the classroom. Many other ways of doing it. Therefore, the people that pay the budgets, pay the money, are getting better results for less time. And of course, they're looking at it and saying, hold on, well, you know, we don't actually want to put people into classrooms, because if you put people into classrooms, you've got to pay for them to travel by car or train. Sometimes there's long journeys. Whereas on the Zoom, on the computer, you can have the same results for much less time and money involved. So they're the people who drive it. They're the people, after all, who commission the training and pay for it.
And what do you think about the advisors advising face-to-face sort of going forward? Do you think that will change? I think a lot of people that I've spoke to are kind of like, oh, I'm saving so much time, not traveling, getting in my car. I can do more appointments. I can advise and help more people. So how do you think the market's going to shift or stay the same, or hard to tell?
It's difficult to tell what's going to happen. And again, we can all predict, but we can speculate with the trends that are happening now. And there's a few features here to talk about that'll help you. Firstly, I think the majority of mortgage advisors and the majority of financial advisors will work with a hybrid model. I think there will be an element of face-to-face or in-person, as I call it, and there will be an element of face-to-face on video. And I call, by the way, video selling face-to-face because, you know, your face and there's their face, so you're face-to-face. And I was doing some work a week before last with a client on facial body language reading because we're not reading legs and arms anymore, are we? We're reading faces, we're reading expressions, smiles, frowns. And we were talking about how you can read a client's face to get the buying signals going. And they found that fascinating. We're getting a hybrid model. I think a lot of clients like it, Alex. That's the other thing. A lot of clients like it. I mean, as a client myself with my IFA, I've always met him on video for years, but that's me. But a lot of clients are beginning to think, actually, I quite like this. I can meet my IFA for half an hour for a review meeting, just like that. And I can meet my mortgage advisor for 25 minutes for this. Rather than enduring the two-hour in-person meeting, the client can have three or four 20-minute meetings spread over three or four days, which is dead easy to do and much better way of handling things. So clients are liking it as well. Will it bring the costs down to the client? I think it will. I do believe there's going to be a pressure on fee income in the next few years. People don't want to hear that, but there will be. IFAs, for example, are going to be pressurized on fund management charges. You've got the likes of Vanguard coming over, charging next to nothing now to manage your money. And the younger generation are using these things all the time now. So the Zoom type advisory process will allow them to do more business for less time. They can still make a good living, if you see where I'm coming from. I think that will drive it. There will also be in-person meetings, but maybe the first meeting might be in-person, you know, the get-to-know-you meeting, you know? And these won't be in offices so much anymore. They'll be in meetup rooms. I mean, here in Cheltenham, we've got dozens of these like hubs, they're calling themselves now. They're changing the way they operate. So you can meet people there now in a booth that's kind of nobody else is in it. So it's quite healthy. So maybe the first meeting would be in person. But once you've got that rapport, that trust, then all your further meetings can be on Zoom online.
I love this analysis of facial expressions as well. And one thing I'm due, because sometimes, I mean, I'm sitting down now, but sometimes I'll do the podcast standing up and sometimes I'll do video standing up. And would it be weird doing a advising standing up on video? Would it be easier because your arms are free, your body's sort of more free? What are your kind of thoughts on it?
Medically, if you stand, your voice comes across much more powerful. You can use all your resonance if you're standing. If you're sitting and you start crunching your diaphragm and you losing your energy. So that the voice is definitely affected by standing versus sitting. When you're doing a fact find, you don't need a powerful voice. You just need to have a good conversation. So sitting down's fine. The other thing is presenting versus discussing. If you're presenting, standing up works really well. But yeah, it's about moving around. Right now, for example, I'm sitting on a bar stool. Not a real one, but it is, but it's not in a bar. I'm sitting on a bar stool in my studio. So I'm half sitting down, half standing up. And I've got a microphone headset so I can talk to you whilst using my arms. And you can't see me, but I'm actually gesturing with my arms as I talk to you. And that enhances my voice and gives me a bit more resonance, a bit more power, I suppose. If I was sitting down, not moving, I wouldn't have that ability.
In what kind of situations are mortgage brokers presenting rather than discussing? Are you finding a lot of them are kind of trying to host their own kind of webinars on remortgaging or buy-to-lets? Or I know some people are doing probably more so on the sort of buy-to-let and landlords type stuff than maybe commercial. But are you seeing a lot of them? Are you coaching a lot of them in that type of marketing?
Yeah, that's you just hit the nail on the head there. It's marketing, isn't it? And that's your territory. That's where you excel. And the conversation we had the other week where you talked about educating your customer, I thought was very insightful because the younger generation only want to meet an advisor when they know a little bit about the topic. I thought that was very insightful. Therefore, a lot of brokers, a lot of IFAs, a lot of advisors will need to start presenting. And yeah, when you're presenting to a group of people, be that on video, be that live in a hotel room or something like that, then of course you need to be able to have stand-up skills. And in those situations, I think you should be standing. And I'll tell you a bit more about why I feel that way. I was on LinkedIn this morning looking at various videos of advisors, mortgage advisors, you do the same. And many of them put their videos on there. I don't know why, because their clients are probably not on the LinkedIn, but maybe their location is probably more Instagram or Facebook or something. But they're putting their videos on LinkedIn. And many of them are just sitting down, presenting, talking head. It's not a difficult thing to do. And after a minute or so, the energy starts to run dry a bit, really. So that's one example. Many of them like to use visual aids, PowerPoint, of course, ubiquitous PowerPoint. And some will hide behind the PowerPoint as they're vocalizing the slides. And some slideshows they're using are woeful. And that's not a criticism, because they don't know any different, because they've seen slides at the annual conference by the chief executive, and she's got up and delivered slides full of bullets. And they look at that and go, well, that's the way I should do it. So they do the same bulleted slide online on their videos. Of course, online video PowerPoint is just so different to in-person PowerPoint. So different. Massively different. So we teach that. I was working with a group this week, I mentioned to you, and they use slides, PowerPoint. It's fair enough. There's nothing wrong with them. You do need some visual stimulus when you're online presenting. You can't just stand there and talk. But we talked about doing a couple of things, really. We talked about embedding your video image with the slides, and that's really cool. So you've got the slide, if you like, but you've also got you talking embedded into that, maybe on a green screen, so your head and shoulders are there, you know, over the slides. That's not a tricky thing to do, but it makes it look good. So you're still there. Because in person, if you're at an event, the speaker would be standing next to the slides, and she would be presenting, and you'd have slides on the right, you'd have the speaker on the left. So you're kind of doing the same thing. The other thing you've got to teach them how to do is to change how the slides are created. And there's plenty of people around that will do that for you. Slides online have to be moving every 3 to 4 seconds. Something has to happen. A movement, an animation, a new picture, a new word. Something needs to be going on every 3 to 4 seconds. And when they realize that, the penny drops and people realize they have to redo their slides completely. So I think mortgage advisors, financial advisors, brokers who present using online medium, like a live stream, for example, live streaming to YouTube, live streaming to LinkedIn, which is very popular nowadays, live streaming to Facebook, of course. Live streaming is great because you're live. You've got that energy. It's like you and I right now, we're live. We can't suddenly re-record this. We're live to a degree. Therefore, you've got extra energy. When you're live streaming on video and you're presenting to 1,500 people on YouTube or whatever it is, you get that extra energy. But then you've got to be standing presenting. And you've got to have a decent venue to do that. You can't just sit in your dining room table and do it with the kitchen cooker behind you. We've got away with that in the last few months because we're all in the same boat, as they say. Or actually, we're not in the same boat. You've probably heard this one before. We're all in the same ocean, but we've all got very different boats.
My boat has got a metal filing cabinet, which everyone thinks is a fridge. So people do think. And I've got fridge magnets. So I sort of, people do think I'm in my kitchen, but I'm in an office. I get wound up about that a lot. People.
Your office looks like an office, though, and you've got your character in there, which I like about it. But there's some people who've got swimming pools in the background, that sort of thing. You know, that's the different, that's a different boat. I mean, So you've got to have we talked about Zoom zones, didn't you? You've got to have a zone where you present from. And for many mortgage advisors, financial advisors, it will be in their home. Traditionally, they worked out of their spare bedrooms. It's a bit of a metaphor, isn't it? They've gone to clients' homes mostly. But if they need to spend time on creating a bit of a studio, a bit of kit, decent microphone, decent camera, all the things you need, a background, maybe a green screen they pull down, put a few virtual backgrounds on there that don't make you look like an alien, all the shadows and things. Maybe just a decent Zoom background with a plant in the back, or whatever it needs to be. So that's what we teach them, how to do that. Because I think they're going to be doing a lot more of that, a lot more presenting.
Awesome. So if I haven't done any of your training for, I'm kind of thinking, well, did you know what? This Paul guy sounds all right. Sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Where do I go? How do I get in touch? What's, you know, if they say a typical self-employed broker, they're with a network, they're thinking, I need to, this Zoom zone thing, I need to get it sorted. Where am I going? Where do I start? What do I do?
Well, the first thing I point people towards, Alex, is my YouTube channel. And the reason I do that is because it's all free on there, and that's good. And the younger generation use that as their search engine of choice. So I point them to my YouTube channel, and my YouTube channel is paularcher.tv. Sounds ever so dramatic, doesn't it? But so it's www.paularcher.tv, and that'll take you to my YouTube channel. Now on there, we've got hundreds of videos on there of me doing what I talk about. And people can gorge on those if they want to and get as much information as they need. Have a look at some of the old ones, but they're pretty scarily awful. I've kept them on there. I started my YouTube channel in 2010, I think it was. Some of those early videos are awful, Alex. They're quite embarrassing to watch the quality.
I was thinking the same, our Facebook Lives when we were going live at first. I was like, God, this is dreadful. But yeah, okay. So if I were to choose it, so you've got your intro video there, your sort of channel intro, your showcase that you did in Feb 2020, looks like. But if I were only to choose one to watch first, which would you prefer me to watch?
Oh, gosh, that's a question I can't answer straight away, really, because they're all in date order, aren't they? Have a look at the channels. If you're interested in the mortgage world, then I would go to the Mortgage Live Stream channel, which is within my channel, Mortgage Live Stream. Have a look at the last Mortgage Live Stream. What these are, Alex, are 20-minute live streams weekly with a bit of technical stuff, really, because I haven't really talked much about my technical training, really, my CMAP and mortgage training. So there's a bit of technical there, but also usually a sales skill or two for mortgage advisors. So that's what I would do. They're quite fresh, up to date, hopefully a bit of humor in there as well, a bit of whiteboard work. So that's where I would direct them to. From the YouTube channel, I've usually been fairly reasonable. Be good at putting links in there to the website so people can then go to the website where they can buy a book or two. I've published 7 books, 8 books, which they can go onto Amazon and buy those if they want to, which is great if they do. I love that because you're giving away skills for people via a book. If they want to sign up for our weekly Monday night update on all things mortgages and advising, they can do that for free and they can get some information from me there each week. So they can do that. If they want to buy a few bits and pieces, they can. If they want to sign up for some coaching, they can do it there too. But once they're on our member database, as I call it, then I keep in touch. I email people and we you know, give them stuff for free to keep them busy. And some of those people will want to come to me and open up their checkbook and get up some coaching going. So that's the route. And it works. It's nice and low key.
I'm jealous that I've yet to release my first book. Finished it, thought I'd finished it in January, but then delayed it. And then the world changed. And then I've got a load more data for it. So hopefully I'll join. But then I'll be 6 behind you, which feels like a challenge.
I'll tell you a quick story before we turn off. It took me 10 years to write my first book, if there's any consolation. I put it on my goals and it took me 10 years before I got around to it. And I published that in 2011. And then I published another 6 books in 2 or 3 years because you get into how to do it, you know, and you just make it happen, really. But I write a hell of a lot anyway, all the time. Every week I'm writing articles and blog posts and I'm publishing everywhere. So books are really just combinations of all the things you've written in the last year or two. Just combine it into a topic. But you won't become a millionaire by publishing books nowadays.
No, I literally have wrote it. I've wrote that off as a, this is going to cost me.
Yeah, it does.
Get a book out there. It's not a revenue stream for sure. Definitely, yeah. So they're definitely going into that eyes wide open.
Yeah, but it's fun, isn't it? But my main role in life now, I'm 57, I've been in this trade now since 82, and I just want to help as many new people come into our sector, shake it up a bit, bring in some young blood. Dare I say it, you'll probably shout me down, and bring in some more female blood into the sector as well. I'm probably going to get all sorts of, you know, people on LinkedIn now telling me off for that. But it's very male-dominated, our sector. So bring in some less testosterone, if you like, more younger people in, get them into the sector. Mix it up a bit, shake it up a bit. It needs a good shake. It hasn't yet been disrupted by the internet properly yet. It is becoming so now. Disruption's happening massively. That's my main role now. So many people I can get in, get them to be good at what they do, enjoy the job, and give the public of this country some decent advice, which they can afford. That's what I do.
I love it. I love what you stand for. I was just trying to think of, I only know the people that we know in terms of, I know there are a lot of women in the game. I don't think people should shout you down for saying that people should join. I think it should be, if you want to help people, doesn't matter who you are, we should get as many as possible. And I think there's some great, all sorts of people coming in. It's fantastic. But yeah, I think that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's literally making sure that the public are getting good advice from good people. So love it. I'm off to write my 7 books. So I better get on. And I've only got a couple of hours until the weekend. So I need to get at least one of them done.
Fair enough. I'll contribute to the forward for you if you want a reference or on the back of the book. I'm happy to do that for you. There you go.
I've actually, do you know what? I've got quite a few. I did ask a load of people in our group to give me quotes for it and promise them it will go on the book. So I've actually got a little Google form set up, which I'll send you, and I will get it published at some point, definitely.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Definitely. Brilliant.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed it. I know it's a good one when I sort of look around and think how that feels like 10 minutes.
Enjoyed it, yeah.
But we've been chatting for ages.
Enjoyed it very much, Alex. Very much indeed. Thank you for
good, good. Right, we'll have to get you back soon. We'll catch up soon. Hopefully we'll catch up, you know, next year or something in terms of podcast, but I'll speak to you soon, no doubt, anyway. And I really appreciate getting to jump on one of your webinars for your guys. That was really good fun. I hope we collaborate soon.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Alex.
All right, buddy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.